Money Control presents Pitchcraft in collaboration with Seed to Scale.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Pitchcraft, a show where we deconstruct the first pitch deck of some of India's most successful new age companies. On this episode, we feature Honasa Consumer, the holding company of Mamaearth, which is a listed firm today. But what was its first pitch deck like way back in 2016? We're going to be speaking to its co-founder Varun Alakh and one of its first investors, Kawaljeet Singh. But before that, here's a peek into the Mamaearth journey. Founded in 2016 by husband-wife duo Varun and Ghazal Alakh, Honasa Consumer, Mamaearth's parent company, has emerged as one of the hottest new age consumer companies in India, riding the direct-to-consumer wave, where brands sell directly to consumers from their website or via e-commerce platforms. Mamaearth offers toxin-free natural products, including bamboo-based face wipes, face masks, lotions, and hair care products. While it started out as a skincare startup focused on baby care, it has expanded to adult categories in recent years, also stepping up its offline presence via distribution and dedicated stores. Apart from Mamaearth, Honasa today owns other brands such as Dermaco, Aqualogica, Be Blunt, Ayuga, and Dr. Shades. Most of its income comes from the flagship brand. Mamaearth's parent company, Honasa Consumer, became a unicorn in January 2022 when it raised $52 million at a valuation of $1.2 billion. It went from incorporation in 2016 to listing in November 2023 in just 7 years, making it the fastest to IPO among unicorns in India. Hey Varun, welcome to our show Pitchcraft, where we deconstruct the very first pitch deck of some of India's most successful startups. Of course, it'll be ironic to call you a startup now. You're now a listed, publicly listed firm. But we are going to go through something that you created in 2016. Honasa Consumer Care's very first pitch deck, when you were raising your seed round. Yeah. And from there to, you know, IPOing within 7 years. The fastest to IPO among startups in India has been quite a journey. But take us through your first pitch deck. When did you craft it? What were your reference points? Yeah. Was this just after you and Ghazal decided to start up?
Well, hey, thank you. Thank you for having me on this show and also taking me through this journey. I didn't know it's been a while since I had pulled out this pitch deck and seen what we had sort of, you know, talked about, thought about when we were starting. So it was very refreshing to see as well. Right? I think for us, the work on this deck really started about 3 to 4 months down into the journey. And because only when you have clarity around not just what you want to solve, but also how are you going to approach that, right? And, I mean, not all answers, right? But at least the larger, bigger answers that you need to be able to solve that opportunity, right? And is when you're in a position that you can create a structured story, right, around how you're going to approach an opportunity and how you're going to capture that. So it did take us 3 to 4 months to actually study the market, study consumers, study competition, understand how we can be different and how our proposition can be unique, right? To actually reach a stage where we could put it down into a presentation. And, of course, I've had about 10 plus years of corporate work experience, right? And if there is one thing which corporate does teach you is making good presentations, right? So that did come in handy, right? When I was putting down this presentation and wanted to create a piece of communication, right? Which can help tell our story. Right? And I think, you know, while I'll take you through some of this, right? I think the bigger things that we were keeping in mind was the fact that this could potentially be used in two ways. And one would be a version of this which you would send to people over an email, over, you know, over a communication medium where you will not be present to take them through it. And how do you see that piece of communication? Because you're not present while they're going through it. Right? And how does the pitch deck hence talk to that person themselves, right, without you needing to be there? And and hence, if you will go through this pitch deck, this one is the one that we used to send. Right?
So you or Ghazal, who designed it?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So in terms of storytelling, right, we wrote the whole story. So actually, the first step in designing a pitch deck, right, for us is actually taking a paper and pen, right, and writing down, right, what is the story that you want to tell, right? Linearly, right, what is the journey, right, that you want to take the person through. Right? In fact, even before that, right, what we thought about and what we wrote down was, what would the person think when, you know, be in the state of mind when they actually receive or, you know, be in a position to receive a pitch deck.
Right? Put yourself in the investor's
Yes,
shoes.
Right. And think about what kind of questions will come to their mind. Right? And, oh, another, you know, set of founders who come to, what
there
big would they be?
There is already Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, right. And yeah. How are they different? Right? And how can they win in this market? And what is different now? Why was this not done by the larger players 7 years back? Right? And if this is such a evident opportunity, why is everyone not doing it? And I mean, what kind of questions which come to their mind?
Basically, and what is your right to win in the space?
Yes, and more importantly, right now, our most important objective out of this specific exercise, right, is to get them interested in what we are trying to build. And the first objective is that, right? That through the pitch deck, right, that's what you're trying to achieve, right? That they should be keen and interested in both you as a founder set, right, as well as the opportunity that you're going after, right, and the set of execution plans that you have put down, right, in terms of approaches to go after that. And as long as you've gotten them interested, right, the job of the pitch deck is kind of done. Right? And after that, other conversations, etc., will get them to a level where they might choose to invest or not. Right? But the role of this one, right, is to move them from I don't know, I don't care, right, to I know and I'm interested. Right? And what are the gaps in their minds from a questions perspective that you need to solve? So we used to write those questions. Right? After writing those questions, then we would write what are the answers to these.
When you were making a pitch deck, were there other pitch decks that you found interesting in the consumer space in India or other parts of the world which you think were, you know, a good reference point, which had the structure you spoke about? It answered all the questions that are mostly there in the minds of investors.
So honestly, we did go through, at that time, SlideShare used to be there, right? And it used to be a popular tool. We did go through that, right, to find quality presentations that might be there around how to pitch. Right? That said, I come from a communications background, right? I mean, marketing and communication is something.
And
that
from
I've
an FMCG background,
yes, so
HUL and Diageo and all.
I think, you know, the way I've been sort of at least introduced to presentations and all is that it is another communication tool. Right? Like, an email is a communication tool, like me talking to you is a communication tool, and a PowerPoint or a pitch deck is also a communication tool. And it's supposed to help me take you from point A to point B in your mind.
Right.
Like any communication is supposed to do. Right?
And turn someone who's indifferent to someone who's interested.
So, and hence, like you have a communication brief around an ad, for example, right? The kind of questions that you ask is, what do the consumers think, feel, do today? And what do you want them to think, feel, do after they have seen your communication? And is how I would look at a presentation as well, right? So I think more than referring to some of those externals.
Right, let me in fact go through the first few slides. So if you actually look at the opening slides, you know, you've defined the problem statement and you also, you know, made it personal because you communicated that, you know, we are parents, we totally get what this problem is. This is a problem that we ourselves are grappling with. And the first product category is actually an insect repellent cream for babies, which is super niche, super specific. So again, were you worried about the categories that you were first taking to market? Yeah. That, you know, an investor will say, but you know, I mean, insect repellent cream for babies is super, super niche. Yeah. Or was the market evolving at that point where there was a demand for this? Because you also explained, you know, families are becoming more nuclear.
Yeah.
We are Google parents. You know, our first reference point is actually Google. And people have fewer children, so they don't want to take chances. So did all those factors kind of play out?
So I think from a pitch deck perspective, Chandra, what I would say is, if you look at this deck, right, it is a combination of 30,000 feet sort of thinking, but then also like a 1,000 square feet execution. Right? You need to be able to show, and which is where early on, we talk about the potential problems that you can solve, right? That we have experienced as parents, or in our research, we have come across, you know, other parents who are experiencing those problems, right? And talking about multiple such problems, right? And to be able to show a 30,000 square feet view as to potentially how large can this opportunity be, right? Because if you're able to solve each one of these problems, right, then you're looking at a very large sort of, you know, business case, and you know, what potential revenue stream that you can create, right? And all of them are genuine problems, because when we explain or talk about them, and especially from a shared journey perspective, because we have gone through them, right, you're able to add texture and clearly establish that the problem is large enough, right? But then any investor would also like to see, right, how you're starting small and you're starting somewhere, right, where your ability to showcase your PMF, right, and ability to showcase early wins, right, is going to be high. And that could potentially be a geography. And you can say, okay, I'm going to do all of these 10 products, but I'm going to choose, let's say, one geography and do it. And or it could be a product category where you could say,
yeah, where you chose one, yes, category, right, one, to begin.
And I would be national because I want to test out the e-commerce muscle. And but I would then focus on first getting that right. And because if I can get that right, and that will give me food. So I think that's how we looked at it when we were designing our execution strategy in this, that in our vision, we need to show all the potential problems which can be solved. And but in our execution plan, we need to be narrow enough to show how we will be able to show you success over the next 3 to 6 months.
Right. And one question, you know, that you often got was, it why, I mean, if this was such a compelling use case, why aren't other companies doing it? And what is stopping a bigger brand to do the same thing? Yeah. I mean, if, you know, I'm supposed brand X, then I just say that, you know, now I'm introducing an organic product line or a baby care line. So the barrier to entry isn't that high. How did you tackle those questions through the pitch deck?
No, again, like I said, right, that was one of the questions which we had thought about clearly was going to come. And in fact, we had conversations also with a few experts or brand leads in larger companies as to why would you not think about that. And I think the two answers that we got were, one, there is some historical baggage that you're sitting on, right? And the business that you're on, right, is so large, right, that suddenly if you come in and say that this is a safe and toxin-free line of baby care that we are launching, right, you're clearly saying that what
the
you currently
other one
have
is not. Right,
is not safe. And hence, while you want to fix it, right, you're just, your baggage doesn't allow you to do that. And I think for us, that was the biggest realization, right, that, you know, till someone else doesn't come and shake up the market, right, they're actually going to continue to do this, because, you know, in absence of market education and in absence of someone else who's now disrupting and telling a consumer a different story, and you're actually comfortable because your base business is growing, and any action that you take and is going to impact, make your base business look bad. So I think that understanding and being able to tell that story was something that everyone understood, and that, okay, this is something that must be happening. And most investors who are, you know, professional investors and invest in multiple businesses, know that this does happen in large companies.
This slide, for example, it talks about your route to market, marketing, customer acquisition, and pricing.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that. Yeah. Would you say this was the standout slide in your deck to show that you meant business?
Yeah. No, I think there are two very critical parts of the pitch deck, right? And like I said, actually three is what I'd say, right? The first critical part of a pitch deck is being able to establish the problem and how it's a large enough problem to solve and why is the time to solve it right now. And I think that is the first section that you need to be very clear about, right? And be able to communicate that clearly. And I do find, and we receive a lot of pitch decks nowadays.
Because you're an angel investor now.
And I do find that a lot of people end up focusing almost 80% of their time on that. Right? But at least in our case, what we clearly realized was that it is not just about the idea. And it is going to be far more about execution and how one team is able to execute that same idea far better than another. And hence, without giving flavor of execution and how you're going to go to market, how you're going to do your early marketing, what is it that you're seeing different from how large brands are sort of doing it so that you can do it in a much more targeted manner? How are you going to use, for example, technology? How are you going to use the new media? And giving some kind of a texture on that and will give comfort to whoever is reading it and evaluating your company as to that these guys are not just focused on idea, but they have clearly got a plan on how to attack that idea, right? And how to look at that opportunity and execute it. So almost equal part of the slide. So ours is almost like, you know, 40% actually idea, 50% focused on execution, and where we are not just talking about how we'll do it, we've also shared a slide and that we are already starting to see things, right? We have talked about which formulators and doctors are on board.
You know, one other startup's pitch deck that I saw had the founders right in the first slide. Why did you guys put yourselves towards the end? Because investors, I mean, they ultimately invest behind the team.
I honestly, we didn't think that much about the order at that point of time, right? You know,
and I actually can't recognize either of
them. I know. Yeah, 7 years does and a lot of work does bring a change, right? But I honestly, we didn't think as much about that piece, right? I think since day one, right, we've kept company ahead of us, right? For us, this was about being able to tell the brand story that we wanted to build more than, you know, our story, right? But if I think about it now, and it is an equally important, like I said, there are three parts of the pitch deck which are critical. One is establishing the problem, and second is establishing how you're going to attack that problem, and third is, of course, why you are the right set of people to attack it. And so I think we kind of chose that order, that we wanted to do problem and then approaching the problem and then come to, you know, us, right, being right, right? You can do this in any order, and we chose that order, right, as the order in which we weren't telling the story,
right? Which actually brings me to the final slide, which is where you ask for the investment. And looking at this now is surreal, because you've asked for $500k dollars. And now I don't know what your current market cap is, Varun. I haven't checked the stock price. What's the current market cap? So you've asked for investment, sound advice and networks. Well, you got that. In fact, on the next segment, we are going to bring on board Hunasa's first investor, one of their first investors, Kawaljeet Singh of Fireside Ventures, who's one of the biggest believers in the Hunasa and Mama Earth story. Welcome back, and as promised, we have one of the first investors of Mama Earth, or Hunasa Consumer as it's known now on the stock markets. Welcome to Pitchcraft, Kawaljeet Singh. You know, this was almost like a walk down memory lane for Varun. Tell us about how you guys connected. Were you a consumer like some of his other investors, or how did the connect happen? And this was actually a phase when, you know, you had left Helion. So it was almost like a startup investor once again investing in a startup.
Absolutely. So, you know, the story of Hunasa is almost, you know, intertwined completely with the story of Fireside. So it was probably one of the first investments that I made after I left Helion, and the whole idea of Fireside even got born. So a lot of nostalgia and a lot of pride and a lot of, almost a privilege to have been part of this journey. So we were not consumers. My kids were probably their age. We had gone past that age. But, you know, what we got connected through a common friend who was in Hindustan Lever. And obviously, you know, the whole power of the Unilever network and the alumni and all came to play here. And all he told me was that, you know, here is this young couple with some very interesting ideas who really want to build something very different. So that was the introduction. And I remember Varun had a phone call with me, and this was in 2016, so much before the Zoom and the video calls and all that. And I didn't even remember where I was standing in my house when I was talking to him. And he just walked me through this thing. So honestly, you know, to me, much, much before the whole, the deck and the story and everything, two, three things stuck. One was the authenticity. You know, I just, you know, almost fell in love with the way I just heard his voice and the passion with which he was talking. Second was the clarity of thinking of not just, you know, here is an idea and we want to do this, but there is a route to that which we have thought about. Whether it will happen, they will go through iterations, but at least the mind had, you know, gone through that whole process of iteration. And third thing which I, you know, found very, very attractive was they were trying to do something with a lot of sense of purpose. It was rooted in their own story. It was rooted in wanting to do something which is good for the child. You know, mothers are worried about the child. You know? So apart from everything else, the purpose behind the story. So those were some of my first impressions. So I made up my mind to invest on the phone. But I said, you know, formality's sake, you know, I have to meet them.
Let me see him and see the deck. Yeah.
And, you know, the apprehension when I, or not even apprehension, the unknown factor was there was very few examples of successful husband-wife teams who had built businesses.
But now we have so many.
So that's
right?
what I meant.
Amagi, Mama Earth, Sugar, Off Business, Oxyzo.
So we have,
who I think are your neighbors,
yeah,
here.
We have 10 companies in our portfolio with husband wife teams. You start with that. So that's what I said. While they set the trend for, you know, natural, they set the trend for, you know, a different way of building a brand, digital first. I also think they set the trend for a husband wife team building a business together, because there was a lot of general apprehension in the VC community of how will the husband-wife team work together, you know, do they take the work home, if they have disagreement in the house, how will it reflect on the business? So honestly, it's not
because
a very,
we have seen those examples,
absolutely,
right, where there was acrimony between
absolutely
them and that
absolutely
ended up impacting.
But honestly, Chandra, that can happen between any co-founders, right?
Yeah, it can. but you know, there is always this whole thing about taking the work home. I mean, at least that was the only thing which I said, at least let me meet them and get to know them better as people. So I met them in Delhi literally after a few days after we spoke on the phone. And I remember it was in the Oberoi Hotel in Gurgaon. And we chatted about everything except the business. And honestly, you know, like I said, there was something which was so endearing about the way they were talking about it. Very complimentary, you know, completely two different sets of, you know, skills and what they could bring to the table. And
you were not apprehensive about investing in a husband-wife?
You know, I wanted to convince myself, and this meeting helped me solve for that one question in my mind. Everything else I had already decided on the phone that this is a good investment that I should be making.
Right. But Kamaljit, you know, you have a track record of investing in consumer brands, right? He's almost the OG in that category, from, I don't know, paper boat to ID to yoga bar. What in your mind, I mean, what were you looking for when you met them, or what boxes did they tick for you as someone who knows the space really well?
Sure. So, you know, honestly, like I said, to me, the first entire, you know, judgment around whether to invest or not is entirely on the founders.
I think this slide would have
so
been
to
the
me,
most important.
I mean, earlier you were discussing about the order. I would put the founder slide first every time. So there
that
is a bias there.
Put the founder
slide
first every time.
Absolutely.
Because this actually establishes his FMCG credentials.
I think it establishes not only their credentials, it also establishes their purpose and the passion of why they want to do this. So the story, you know, they talked about their son, how they were looking for products for their son. So, you know, you connect. honestly, there is a soul in a startup which is very tough to replicate in a large, you know, corporate. Mm-hmm. To me, that is what makes a startup and a corporate very different. So the question you were asking about, you know, why would the others not follow it? Because there is something which is to be said about, you know, living the story, which you can't imagine in a large corporate because there is no soul behind it. I mean, there are very few large corporates which are still run by founders. I mean, of course, we know, you know, Harsh Mariwala and the great Marico story, but most of the other companies are run by professionals. So to me, that is the one, you know, clear value that I see when I talk to people like, you know, you talked about Lishias and Paperboat and others. And of course, Anasa has set the, you know, standards for our generations to come. The second thing which I mentioned earlier, which I really liked about how they were thinking about it, is they had very high clarity on what they were trying to build. So the good for you, the made safe. So they were ticking the boxes on that core, you know, purpose and core idea of what they were trying to build. So even though there was this whole, you know, non-standard format of saying I will do a mosquito repellent cream and I'll also do, you know, a mosquito, I'll also do diaper rash creams and I'll also do, you know, things for colic, you know, rub-ons and all that. But the continuity in the entire idea was linked to that good for your child, safe for your child, and I'm going to give you something which is natural, which is authentic. So to me, the brand was that, and that's what attracted me with all due humility, that what Varun and Ghazal have built through Hanasa has been a playbook learning for all of us. So, you know, you start with saying, how do you build a digital brand first? And I can remember, you know, Varun used to come and sit in the Amazon office for the full day and sit in the Flipkart office for the full day. So even understanding what a digital brand is almost like, learning in itself. Then this whole idea of going from child to the parent, to the mother, and, you know, how do you transcend a brand across these things? You know, I am a Levers alumni. So for us, this was...
So is he, right? Yeah.
But, you know, it is blasphemous to think that a brand can stretch across all these categories. And now that you see the success, you can now start reverse analyzing, seeing why it worked. And it's so common sense. It's so logical. Then doing a house of brands and having a completely different way of looking at how the business grows. So to be honest, you know, if you ask me, did we have clarity on all of this? Answer is no. But we just said, you know, I mean, pardon the language, but achhe log hain, kuch karenge. So honestly, you know, that is what really attracted to me.
Right, that very nice words coming from him. But Varun, you know,
that's the last statement that we parted even in 2016 September when we met for the first time.
Log hai to kuch karenge.
Achhe log ho, tum kuch kar loge. Ye nahi karoge to kuch aur karoge. But I am with you guys, right? So I think that's how. You
see, know, the funny thing is that sorry, Varun, I am very intuition led. So all these companies where I have taken judgment calls are all based on, you know, just disconnect.
Not some Excel sheet.
You know, Excel sheets don't work at that stage of investing. And I love that stage of investing. So I cannot do a late stage investing because that's not who I am. So my team sometimes complains to me saying, listen, you take such, you know, intuition calls, you know, data, and, you know, how do you analyze this? So I said, listen, you do that and I will do that. And hopefully, you know, we can do a great combination together.
But touch wood, your judgment hasn't, you know, proved you wrong till now in most of your bets. But Varun, you know, the factors that he mentioned on how you used to take a lot of time to figure out how to build out digital first brands. Were you also worried that, you know, they are too dependent on, say, an Amazon and a Flipkart, and, you know, they need to sort of outgrow that dependency? Would that come up in the conversations?
So, you know, honestly, to begin with, we felt this was the right thing to do. Because this was the disruption that would change the way, you know, brands were built in India. And the whole idea of Fireside was built on that. That if you have to do the same thing that the large companies are doing, you know, mom and pop store, distribution, store by store, it is going to be very difficult, both from execution complexity, the kind of money you require, working capital, etc. So if you had to succeed, it had to be this. Then the question was, how do you make it happen in the most efficient way and the most logical way? And I think there we do believe that we had a role to play in as Fireside, putting a lot of our time, focus, effort. So, you know, working with people like Amazon, working with people like Flipkart, BigBasket, these were the early, you know, digital kind of platforms. And like I said, the mutual learning from, you know, what Varun was learning, we were learning from that. What we were learning, we were sharing with them. So there was never any question about, is this the right strategy? The question always was an execution, saying, how do we do it in the best manner? And that obviously, like I said, we learned as much from Varun as we could help him.
And you want to add to that?
The only concern in all of our minds was on how large can it potentially be? And that's the conversation that we usually used to have as to, okay, if the brand will be 100 crore size, right, what percentage would come from online, what would come from offline? Right? And when we started, at least most of us had a far more skew towards offline because nobody had seen large brands online. Getting created online. Right? That said, every 6 months, right, when we used to, the good thing was we always used to look at numbers and metrics, right, rather than on the business side, taking decisions purely basis gut or intuition, right? And when we used to see numbers, right, they were always surprising us, right, on what the potential of this online and e-commerce based brand building could be.
Right? In terms of the return on ad spend?
No, in just terms of the scale that you could build. Of course, in terms of targeted return on ad spends, that's to a given, right? Because if you're using traditional media, you could not even afford it at that point of time. We raised our first sort of round that we raised was $100,000, right? I mean, you can't like rent a billboard in Gurgaon for $100,000, forget a print ad.
And the $100,000 came from
Fireside and then, you know, a few other angels, right? So, etc. is how it sort of started. And we wanted to start very small because we wanted to actually take it to a level where we could show some PMF, right? And then raise a larger round where, you know, bases the confidence that we've been able to showcase in business, right? But I think that was something which we were all watching, right? As to how large can the online space be for us, right? And the good thing was, as long as we all were seeing the metrics moving in the right direction, we all were of the view that let's keep doubling down, right? Yeah. Let's just keep building this, right? Till this doesn't start feeling that it's not growing anymore.
There was one particular slide where you said we will be $1 billion and we will be a public company within 10 years.
Yes.
And you actually ended up doing it in 7 years, which is a record. It's the fastest idea to IPO story we've seen. Was that expected, unexpected? Because it was 2 years after you turned unicorn, right? The famous January 1st announcement.
No,
please
come.
No, so, you know, honestly, it was a little bit of a Wild West frontier situation, right? Nobody knew the answers. And I'll also tell you the insight here was that we also had a lot of deep relationships with the large corporate and multinationals. And people like, you know, Unilever Ventures, ITC, Mami, they were all investors in our fund actually. And all of them said, we don't understand what is this digital thing that is happening. So there was almost like, you know, nobody knew the answer. So therefore, how could you predict what size of business and how large it could be? So this question used to come up all the time. And to be honest, you know, the building blocks of how to do it got discovered in that period. And I also believe, to be fair, that, you know, COVID was a force accelerator.
Yeah.
So in a way, you know, you almost converted people not only to believe that digital can work, but also that that was the only option. And that helped the overall industry. And obviously companies like, you know, Honasa and others were able to ride that wave. Boat could ride that wave. But if you ask honestly, I don't think Varun will say it differently, but could we have predicted that we will have a company which would be, you know, 2,000 crores in revenue and $1 billion in, you know, now more than $1 billion in valuation?
Of course, now, I think, you know, we, even till 2 years back, I didn't think we imagine that we will go public now. And that said, in terms of the rigor with which we were running our processes and which we were managing our board, and I think that rigor was there almost for like last 4 or 5 years, right? I mean, having proper annual plans, having quarterly board meetings to review the plans and to talk about the next sort of, you know, quarter plan. There's something, you know, I remember circulating the first business plan note almost 6 years back, right? And, you know, Kamal was very happy in the way at least he was looking at how structured we were, right? So I think we were never afraid of that structure, because it is the way we run the company in general, right? The private to public piece, right? That is new, right? But I'm honestly pretty okay with it now, right? It's not like people are asking random questions, right? They are asking good quality first principle questions, and that just makes you a better business in the long run. So I think pretty comfortable with that.
Right. Coming to the final part, Kaval, you know, Varun earlier said that he sees the deck as a communication tool, just like an email is a communication tool, a deck is a communication tool. How do you perceive the deck, considering you said you're very intuitive as an investor?
Sure.
You didn't even need to see the deck before you thought that, you know, okay, Varun is an interesting guy, let me go and meet him. So what role has the pitch deck played for you in all your investments?
So, you know, honestly, to me, the pitch deck is a little bit of an insight or a glimpse into the mind of the entrepreneur. So I would ignore the data part because it's just too early to get the data. Of course, we all know the market and all that. I am looking for clarity of mind, clarity of thinking. So the fact that, you know, they have put down a roadmap, the fact that they have thought about how they want to build this thing. So to me, that is a good, you know, indication of the quality of the mind as much as the data that is written on the chart. So that is one. Second is, like I said, there is a story. And that part I totally agree with Varun, that, you know, it is all about storytelling. And not just storytelling in the sense of, you know, story, you make up something, but it's the authenticity of that story. And ultimately, we are buying into a vision and a passion of the founders, which is, you know, ultimately the only reason that you are trusting, you know, somebody with the money, because there's nothing else to show, to be honest, at this stage of the business. I think the last point, just to add to what you asked about that $1 billion and the vision, honestly, if somebody is putting that number down and saying, I'm going to be a $1 billion company in 10 years, to me, $1 billion was probably not as important. The 10 year was very important because you're thinking long term, and building brands is not easy, and building brands will not happen in 2, 3, 4 years time. So to me, a lot of the deck insights come from how you are thinking about the business and your how you are thinking about the building the business as much as the data that is written on it. So I see it as a communication tool, but I am reading a different communication because that's what I'm trying to analyze. And then I corroborate that when I meet the founder or I spend time with the founder, saying, are they talking the same language that they have written, or have they, you know, put something which somebody has told them is a good way to present it?
Right. If, you know, someone wants to build a consumer brand today, do you think there is still a market for it, or do you think it's been tapped out? There's a certain level of fatigue because online brands themselves are going offline now. So do you think there is still potential?
100%. We are scratching the surface. And I will tell you, you know, let me take a few examples from our portfolio and then I'll tell you why I feel this is just the start. You know, we said Mama Earth, you know, and they have covered every element of the, you know, the sphere with, you know, Dermaco and then Ecologica, Dr. Sheth and all that. Said, what else is left there? Then we had a Pilgrim, which is bringing international beauty regime to India, doing really well. And then we have a Nat Habit, which is trying to bring kitchen products. So India is still very brand starved. The story of India, as far as branded consumption is concerned, is just starting. So we believe that there is a massive, so I think the difference is, and that's where it would be great to clarify to a lot of budding entrepreneurs and the ecosystem, it is not about the channel choice. It's not about saying, oh, online is gone or D2C is gone. It's about saying, is there a space in the consumer's mind, in their consumption?
For this product.
For this particular product and the brand that you can connect to the consumer. As long as you have that insight, then it doesn't matter whether you're online, offline, because even offline, you know, now you have things like ONDC, you have great distribution companies coming up. So it is not that you cannot build a business which is a combination of online and offline. In fact, most successes now are happening, as much as what Honasa is doing, is this hybrid or the omni-channel model. So now we are all developing those learning exercises, right? We understand how to build an omni-channel brand. But the insight has to be brand and consumer led and not channel led. I think that's the mistake a lot of the people are making, saying that online is done and D2C is done. It was never about online or D2C. It was always about consumer and the insight into what the consumer is looking for and how do you build for that.
Right. Final question for you, Varun. What would your, you know, if you have to give, I don't know, like 2, 3 tips or tricks for an entrepreneur who wants to say, okay, I want to build the next Honaza, or I want to build a consumer brand, what would you say to them?
I think firstly, I would say that, you know, you need to be able to identify the problem that you're solving with that brand.
And right? Put that in the...
Yeah, and of course put that in there, but you should be able to internalize and feel very strongly for that problem. And how are you different from someone else who's trying to solve that problem as well, right? Because I don't think there is space for me too's as much. Right? Me too's don't get the brand premium. And over time, then, you know, you become a little more commoditized. Only the differentiated brands who've got first mover advantage in that specific proposition or space which they stand for continue to sort of, you know, build on that advantage. So I think having that clarity of what are you solving for and how are you going to be different from others who are present in that space, right, is very, very critical. And you've got to bring that to life in your pitch deck. Second, like Kaval mentioned, I think it's as much as the idea, it's equally important to be able to show what is your level of comfort with the execution and the approach. Right? And how are you going to execute it? Right? Where you've clearly culled out a few things which are different, right, compared to how others are executing it. Right? Or your quality of execution is going to be superior because your granularity is superior. Right? So I think second, giving comfort. And then third, very importantly, right, this is not just about story. Right? It is also a mirror into your quality of output and work. Right? This is probably the first thing that your company is delivering. Mm. And hence, quality of how this looks, how the numbers add up, and how you clearly can answer questions around each one of the things which are in there, and just tells the other person how thorough you are, and how attention to detailed you are, and how much you genuinely care about your company's product. Because how you do anything is how you do everything, right? Especially when it comes to your first interactions. Right? So if this is high quality, right, you've actually communicated that, you know, this is the first product from my company, and if this excites you, imagine what else can I do?
Great. On that note, thank you very much for joining us on this episode of Pitchcraft. And here's wishing you and Ghazal the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Money Control presents Pitchcraft in collaboration with Seed to Scale.